It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
As the ACLU pointed out, completely ignored the fact that public entities are subject to the federal Constitution and that the federal Constitution is superior and supreme under the Supremacy Clause to any state statute or regulation. So it's a circumstance in which the AG's opinion is written about a small fraction of the law that applies, and as a consequence of that, should be ignored rather than accorded any deference.
Former Chief Deputy Attorney General and current General Counsel to Equality Virginia, Claire Guthrie-Gastanaga, points out the many sources of law that recently were overlooked by Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli and which grant protection to gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgendered persons. And in a follow-up from last week's interview, we answer a listener's question about time-barred debts during this week's question and answer. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 83, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. As a result of this year's Virginia General Assembly, car title lenders may continue to charge high interest rates, but will be limited in how much they can charge and how much they can lend borrowers. Currently, the lenders are unregulated, charge more than 300% annual interest, and can repossess a borrower's vehicle if he falls behind on the payments. The new law puts a one-year limit on the loans, sets up a maximum interest rate, and requires the lenders to be licensed. Lenders still will be able to charge between 15 and 22% per month, or between 180 and 264% per year, depending on the amount of the loan, cannot lend more than 50% of the vehicle's value, and borrowers must own the car. The new law requires the loan be repaid in full within 1 year, and at least 8 1/4% of the principal must be paid each month. These provisions should put a stop to endless payments that never reduce the amount that is owed. Although the lenders aren't currently regulated in Virginia, there are about 130 car title lenders in the state. The new law takes effect October 1, 2010. In other news, Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli recently reached a settlement with a Virginia Beach car title lender that had been charging 360% interest per year. Jerry's Loan Center waived its claim on $84,000 in outstanding loans and agreed to lower its annual interest rate to 12%. The company could have legally assessed its original exorbitant rates had it offered open-end loans with no firm due date. The loans were illegal only because they had to be paid off in 1 month. Cuccinelli and his predecessors, Bob McDonnell and William Mims, have tackled a half a dozen predatory lending cases in recent years referred to them by the Virginia Poverty Law Center. While that's not a large numbers, state laws against unfair lending practices are so lax that any enforcement effort is noteworthy. The cases have all been brought based on technical violations. Although Cuccinelli promised as a candidate to aggressively protect the rights of consumers, he has spent much of his first months in office on campaigns against federal climate change legislation, against health care reform, and against anti-discrimination rules protecting homosexuals on state college campuses. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
Last week, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show introduced a new segment, a weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. The Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act covers collectors who collect the debts owed to others. Which two practices are illegal under the Act? A. Telling a third party you owe a debt? B. Calling you more than once a day about a debt? Or C. Saying you could be arrested for not paying a debt? The correct answers are A. Telling a third party you owe a debt, and C. saying you could be arrested for not paying a debt. Both are illegal under the Act. Calling you more than once a day about a debt is not specifically illegal, but calling you an excessive number of times a day is illegal. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in the studio, and it's time for this week's question and answer. We have this week's questioner here. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Michelle from Henrico County.
Welcome to the show, Michelle. What question do we have this week?
I had a question about the credit billing. If you had opened up a credit card from, let's say, a mall store or something, and the account was closed and it's been years, and then you see that they've sold their accounts to another creditor, then it reappears on your credit report. How is that? I mean, I thought that my account was closed and then it was done.
Well, Michelle, that's a really good question, and it actually sort of combines two questions. One is dealing with what we call debt buyers and sometimes zombie debt, the debts that arise from the grave to haunt the living. And secondly, it brings into play the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Debt buying is getting increasingly common. Creditors will extend credit, they will write it off, they'll store the account in their basement, and then they will sell that account, sometimes 2 cents on the dollar, 5 cents on the dollar, to some other creditor who will then try to collect. And this is becoming very popular, and the reason it's done is if you buy debt for 2 to 5 cents on the dollar and you collect even, you know, 8 or 10% of those debts, you're making money hand over fist. And like I say, this is becoming increasingly common. The problem is, though, that a lot of those debts are what we call time barred. That is, once more than 3 years have passed since you fell into default, if it was an oral contract, or once 5 years have passed since you fell into default on a written contract, then that debt is no longer legally enforceable. And if a creditor sues you in court to try to collect that debt, all you need to do is to go to court and say to the judge, Your Honor, this claim is barred by the statute of limitations. And the judge, if the judge is following the law, should throw it out. Nevertheless, a lot of people don't know their rights and they get scared and intimidated to pay these debts. Now, on the Fair Credit Reporting Act, a debt or a bill or a judgment can stay on your credit report for a little bit longer than that 3 to 5 years that I mentioned. It can stay on there for as much as 7 years. And that's true even if it's been sold from one creditor to another. But if you're contacted by a creditor who has bought a debt and you have no idea who the original debt was to, what you should do is to invoke your rights under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And you write to the creditor, because they are required on the first phone call to either give you their name, address, and phone, or to send you that in writing within 5 days. So you write to them and you say, I want you to validate this debt. Once you write that letter requesting validation, they're supposed to stop contacting you about that debt until they have validated the debt. And they should, you know, tell you within usually 60 days why they think the debt is valid. Now, that doesn't mean that it is valid. It just gives you their reasons why it's valid. If they don't follow the law, then they have basically violated the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and you can sue them for money damages, and you could contact a consumer protection attorney. There are several that are listed in the Yellow Pages under lawyers in the Richmond phone book.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for the question. We're here in the studio this week with Claire Guthrie-Gastanaga. She is a former Chief Deputy Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Virginia, and currently she serves as the General and Legislative Counsel for Equality Virginia. Welcome to the show, Claire.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Will you first tell us exactly what is Equality Virginia?
Equality Virginia is Virginia's only statewide education advocacy organization for GLBT people in Virginia, and it works very hard to raise awareness and also advocate for changes in the law that will change people's lives.
And one of the reasons we asked you to be on the show this week is, of course, the recent controversy about the March 4, 2010 letter that was issued by the Attorney General of Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli, to the presidents, rectors, and visitors of Virginia's public colleges and universities. What's your take on this letter?
Well, the Attorney General clearly thought that he wasn't doing anything that was out of the norm. At least that's what appears to me from his reaction. But the reality is that he's the first Attorney General ever to tell the colleges and universities that they cannot have a non-discrimination policy with respect to sexual orientation or gender identity. Certainly reached out affirmatively and volunteered to provide this advice in a circumstance in which it's not clear anybody really asked for it.
And that's interesting, because I noticed when I printed out the letter today, it says attorney-client privileged communication right on the top. What does that mean, and why is that there in the first place?
Well, that actually distinguishes it from what would be called an official opinion of the Attorney General, which goes through a public process and is issued publicly and is entitled to deference in a court of law. This is informal advice to the colleges, and advice is exactly that. It's advice, and the colleges can choose to ignore it, and we've encouraged them to do so.
And why have you encouraged the colleges and universities to ignore it?
Every college and university in Virginia, with only a couple of exceptions, Virginia Military Institute and Virginia State being the exceptions, has long since put in place on their college campuses policies against discrimination based on sexual orientation, and some also based on gender identity or expression. Those policies have been put in place for good reason, which is to say, one, it's the right thing to do and it's the moral thing to do, but it's also required by some accrediting bodies, including the American Bar Association, that accredits college law schools. And it also is the right thing to do because it places the universities in a position to compete effectively in a national pool for the best students and the best faculty and staff.
Now, the very next day after the Attorney General issued this opinion, the ACLU of Virginia, on March 5, issued a letter to the university presidents basically saying, even if there's no protection under Virginia law, there's protection elsewhere. What do you make of their letter?
Well, the American Civil Liberties Union did the colleges and universities, the public colleges and universities, a favor by reminding them that they are creatures of state government, and as such, their actions are judged under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution in terms of whether they treat people equally, and all people are entitled to the equal protection of the law when they're interacting with the government. And colleges and universities as public entities are the government, and the ACLU has said that it's their view, and they think the better legal view, that the 14th Amendment would give people a remedy if the public colleges discriminated against them based on sexual orientation or gender identity, because such discrimination would be arbitrary and capricious and deny people the equal protection of the law.
So you're saying that even if the state government, or for that matter, the federal government, doesn't directly come out and say discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity is illegal or prohibited, that the Constitution of the United States, at least, protects different classes of people, even if they're not specifically named, from being treated differently because of some factor.
Yeah, I mean, one reason why we encourage people to ignore the Attorney General's advice is it's not comprehensive. He wrote his letter based on just purely and simply on the state of Virginia statutory law, and Virginia statutes currently don't provide explicit protection to people in the Commonwealth against discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. But what he ignores are several things. One, that universities and colleges, even under state law, are different creatures from local government, which is what the prior opinions he relied on dealt with. They have different kinds of authority and more independence as separately incorporated entities with boards of visitors. Second, he completely ignores, and the ACLU doesn't cover this either, the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States has recognized that colleges and universities have inherent institutional autonomy to decide what should be taught, who should teach it, and how. In other words, institutional academic freedom. And one would argue that that is a foundation for making their own policy judgments in this area. And third, as the ACLU pointed out, completely ignored the fact that public entities are subject to the federal Constitution, and that the federal Constitution is superior and supreme under the Supremacy Clause to any state statute or regulation. So it's a circumstance in which the AG's opinion is written about a small fraction of the law that applies, and as a consequence of that, should be ignored rather than accorded any deference.
On March 10, a former Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, our current governor, issued Executive Directive Number 1, which seemed to reinforce what you've said about Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, protecting people based on a factor, whatever that factor might be, such as sexual orientation or gender identity. Again, what's your opinion or take on the governor's Executive Directive Number 1?
Well, I mean, the seeds for this entire controversy were sown in 2006 in February, when the former Attorney General, now governor, issued an opinion that said that the governor of the Commonwealth, as the chief personnel officer of the Commonwealth, could not issue an executive order that extended protection against discrimination to state workers based on sexual orientation. And so EV knew for 4 years that when this governor took office, he was unlikely to sign an order which he had written as Attorney General. It would be unlawful for him to sign. And we've been working for 4 years to try to change the state statute. And this year we had a bill called Senate Bill 66, which was before the legislature. When the controversy broke because of the Attorney General Cuccinelli's letter, Equality Virginia wrote a letter that said to the governor, you know, you have time before the end of the session to send down a bill and to help make this happen, to change the law so that this doesn't become an issue. And the governor chose not to do that. The controversy did not abate, and in fact, it became more incendiary. And so the governor was put in a position where he had already changed the executive order of the Commonwealth to delete and to repeal the protections based on sexual orientation, and he needed to do something. So he's now issued this thing called an executive directive, which he says he has the authority to issue because, frankly, it doesn't have the force and effect of law, and that, he would argue, differentiates it from the executive order that he said he didn't have the authority to sign. But the executive order is, in that circumstance, pretty meaningless when it comes to affording protection to anyone. And it only applies to employees and not to students.
What are the flaws with what the governor is doing?
Well, we wrote to him to say, A, thank you for doing it, because it does, you know, it does represent a step forward that he put something on the books that addresses sexual orientation as a protected class. However, as we pointed out in our letter, the executive order is not sufficient because it's not enforceable. It doesn't have the force of law. It's not sufficient because it doesn't cover students, and students are as much the beneficiaries as campus policies as employees are. And it's not sufficient because it doesn't establish the policy for the Commonwealth that discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity will not be tolerated. And while he said, the governor has said that he, would fire somebody who he found had practiced such discrimination, it's not clear if he fired somebody that they wouldn't have a good cause of action to say that his decision was unauthorized for the same reasons laid out in his original opinion on the executive order question. So the only thing that's going to make a real change is to change the state statute, and the governor missed an opportunity to do that during the recently ended legislative session, and we've asked him to work with us going forward to accomplish that objective next time the legislature meets.
So what's next in this fight for protection, real protection, for people based on sexual orientation, gender identity, whether they're employees, whether they're students, or just, you know, whether they're just citizens of the Commonwealth?
Well, I think we've said to the governor and to the boards of visitors and the presidents of the colleges and universities that there are three things that we should be working together to do. One is to change the Virginia Human Rights Act to state unequivocally that discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity is explicitly against the public policy of the Commonwealth. Once that's done, that will open the opportunity for a lot of other things to take place that currently are said to be not authorized because that policy statement's not in the code. Second, we would encourage the governor and others to join us in seeking a change in the statutes applicable directly to public employees so that they are directly protected. And third, we're looking to the governor to work with us to offer expanded benefits to state employees so that they can get health insurance for people who live in their households. That's a proposal that was pending at the end of the last administration, which was taken off the table by this administration for many of the same reasons that General Cuccinelli has suggested the colleges must rescind their non-discrimination policies.
And Claire, I understand that there's going to be some public advocacy that's going to take place 1 week from today. Can you tell us about that?
I'd love to. The General Assembly reconvenes to look at gubernatorial amendments and vetoes on April 21st, Wednesday. And on that day at 11 a.m. at the Bell Tower on Capitol Square, we're having a major rally to encourage the legislature to act to change state law going forward. And we'd love to have everyone come. We're going to have some speakers, but mostly, you know, the purpose there is to demonstrate by our physical presence that there are a lot of people in Virginia who deeply care about making sure Virginia is a Commonwealth that's equally welcoming to everyone, including our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender citizens and friends.
We have been talking with Claire Guthrie-Gastanaga. She is a former Chief Deputy Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Virginia and currently serves as the General and Legislative Counsel for Equality Virginia, an organization that fights for protections against discrimination against folks based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. Thank you so much for being here.
It's time for our new segment, a weekly quiz called Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, We'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of the Virginia State Bar's Handbook on Your Legal Rights and Responsibilities. Here's this week's question. Under Virginia's employment at will doctrine, you can be fired for any reason at all except a prohibited reason. Which two reasons are prohibited? A, because you were not born in the U.S., B, because you have a disability, or C, because you have children. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Unjust treatment at work and a wrongful discharge may seem unfair, but do they constitute legally prohibited employment discrimination? Join us next week when private attorney Harris Butler talks about what is and what is not discrimination in employment and how lawyers prove and win these cases. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.